In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Also want to let everybody know the Niners are back home this week, which means pregame coverage is live from the Hilton Santa Clara Sunday. Don't miss the kickoff show with Lo Neal, Evan Giddings, live 2 hours before the start of the game. Join us at the Hilton Santa Clara. Great food, great drinks, best pregame show in the Bay. You already know that. It's presented by Habas Law. You've been wronged. Habas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit habaslaw.com.
You see the number for that game? The opening number? Niners-Patriots?
I believe I did.
10.5.
10.5.
10.5.
10.5.
So, you know, for everybody who is pulling out their hair over yesterday, and I clearly have because I don't have any left, the level of panic, I mean, we can get there as the week rolls on, but you're still seen by the odds makers as a pretty comfortable bet to go out there and win that game.
Let me pull this up. I looked at it last night to see if anything had changed. I would like to check it right now. Who do you think the NFC favorite is now?
There's a new fave?
Who do you think the NFC favorite is now?
It couldn't be Detroit.
No, it's not Detroit.
And I don't think Minnesota would have climbed all the way up there yet.
No, it's definitely not Minnesota.
It's Seattle, that's a little bit too hot still.
No, yeah, it's not Seattle.
Could it be the we survived by the skin of our teeth Eagles? I'll go with the Eagles.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely, with my tone, I led you in the wrong direction. It is still going away.
The Niners.
The San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, no. Okay.
They went from plus 650 and careened down the board to plus 700.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet it.
And they are, in fact, still, if this is even a way of doing it, but 500 points, if you will, plus 700 all the way down to plus 1200. Still that far clear of the second favorite in the NFC, which is a tie between the Lions and the Eagles.
Yeah, that's, for me, that's crazy. And because I certainly would not bet the Niners right now to win the NFC at plus 700.
Well, it's just the number hasn't gotten good enough. I would still
not
bet
only
on
that.
I want the number to be better.
I don't think the Niners are going to win the NFC.
Oh, don't go there already. Really?
I mean, you look at, you lose Javon Hargrave, one of your best defensive linemen.
Yeah.
You've got a running back who is yet to play, and he's on his way to Europe to get treatment.
That is true.
You've got a wide receiver who has had injuries in his past, and he's hurt again. You've got a pass rusher who's been relatively quiet thus far. You've got a secondary that is a question mark.
That's all fair.
I wouldn't bet it.
Listen, there's plenty of concerns. I just don't think yesterday, if you thought they were on their way before yesterday, I don't see yesterday as a full-blown October, November, December, January, I'm out kind of a performance. There's clearly some problems, and now we get to see if they'll address them or how they address them, but I mean, are we that far off of the Niners stink after yesterday that we
They should still be a playoff team.
Okay.
But you look at yesterday, and yesterday highlights problems that go deeper than Javon Hargrave being gone for the year.
I don't disagree with that.
You've got a defensive coordinator who plays a milquetoast, bland style of defense.
Yeah, they're going to have to make changes.
I just don't know personnel-wise, and I think that your roster has been overrated by many, including myself.
Maybe.
Many people who have said they have the best roster in football, I'm not sure if that's true anymore.
No, maybe they don't. I mean, I know, and for most of us, when we say stuff like that, I think most people are getting wooed by the offense. You know what I mean? Like, and look, there are stars on the defense. But largely, like, who's getting paid on the defense? Fred's getting paid, Nick's getting paid. And those are
Mooney Ward's getting paid.
Paid-ish.
He ranks on the corner list. I'm sure he's top 10.
He's been there for a minute now. He might be. He's getting paid for a corner, but Like, he's not getting that kind of a contract. Like, when we talk about a stacked roster, you know the NFL fandom. We're largely, just like fantasy football, we're talking about offense. We're talking about the best left tackle, the best tight end, the best running back, and now two paid receivers and a quarterback we love. Like, that's, so I'm not disagreeing with you at all. Yes, especially with Dre Greenlaw out, this defense, from a personnel standpoint, is probably not what we've cracked it up to be. I'll agree with that, and at least so far.
13th, Charvarius Ward, in average annual salary. He's 13th among corners.
Okay.
So not quite top 10.
And in the final year of his deal.
Right.
And not off to a great start on that extra next bag that he said he wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. 888-957-9570. How about Murph in the 925? Hi, Murph. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I appreciate you taking my call. Little frustrating after, obviously, the loss yesterday, but even more frustrating is dealing with our delusional Niner fans. I am just shocked at how I've had two arguments today, one about Kyle's play calling, which I want to thank you guys for very strongly straightening people out on how we were running the ball yesterday. We didn't execute on the field. But I had another conversation today with a long-term Niner fan who says Purdy's the problem and can't see the field. I'm dumbfounded. I mean, I'm a long-time Niner fan going back to late 70s. This is the best play calling we've had since the Walsh-Holmgren, you know, tree left the team, and by far the best quarterback play we had since, you know, Steve Young took the shot from Neas Williams back in 99. So maybe you guys can help out a little bit more with my frustration and keep telling these guys how it really is. I'm frustrated. Our fan base doesn't know what they're talking about.
Murph, thanks. Here's what I would say, because there's no way, when you have a performance like that, look, the boss is going to take hits, and he's the boss. He's the boss. So I think there's a fair conversation to be had. But here's where I'll agree with Murph and Dibs. I'm almost 100% sure you agree with me, because we've been having this conversation today. If you want to criticize Kyle Shanahan for yesterday, do it. Maybe think of something a little bit more intricate than I didn't like the play calls. And that doesn't mean that you have to love every single play that he called. But the Niners moved the ball. Purdy was phenomenal. Jennings was generational. And the things that really cratered your game offensively were drops with nothing to do with the coach whatsoever. So there's a Shanahan conversation to be had. I just don't think that's it.
Well, I don't think it's play calling. If the discussion is, you know, kind of in Steve Kerr-esque mode where he won't play the young guys, he's so stuck with Ronnie Bell, he won't play Kuminga. You know, why won't Kerr play Kuminga? Why are we playing Ronnie Bell 30 snaps and Conley gets 20 and Cowing gets zero? If you want to have that conversation, you can, and you can have any conversation you want, but Kyle said earlier in his press call that he doesn't think that Cowing is ready.
Yep.
And so he may be right. He may also be wrong.
Well,
but we're stuck with watching Ronnie Bell make drops. And the thing about the play calling, let's talk about that for just a minute.
Go ahead.
So Ronnie Bell goes on 2nd and 10 from the 43, and the play is for him to go double move, and he's the primary in the route, and he runs a double move, and he's open. So for me, the play call was brilliant, and the execution of the route was incredible. Now, Kyle can't catch the ball for Ronnie Bell. All he can do is scheme up a play, which he did. You know, he'd been going to Juwan Jennings a ton, and Ayuk had 3 targets in the second half, including the 2 previous plays, by the way, were both Ayuk-centric. So you go into your bag and you think, I'm gonna go to Ronnie Bell here off a double move, and I bet you it's going to work. And Bell with a doot-doot, it works.
Yep.
He's open. The throw is there, and he drops it. Kyle Shanahan's play calling.
Yeah.
Mark, this is why I watch games twice, because I don't want to get wrapped up in the emotion. And I see that play call, and just from a play calling standpoint, that was brilliant.
I just don't know how the hell you come out of that game screaming about play calling. And how many times have we heard from people, I can't believe they stopped running the ball. And then you go look at the game tape and you're like, oh, they did. They did. They ran the ball.
Right.
They did.
Except when it was 1st and 20 and no when coach.
You don't run the ball.
And if he did run it there three times, people would be infuriated.
If you want to be mad at Kyle Shanahan for how he handled Steve Wilks last year and the fact that he replaced him in-house with someone who's never had that job and flanked him by someone who was fired by the Chargers for making poor decisions, and now they go out there and look like a bucket of vanilla ice cream, if you want to do that, let's boogie. Now that to me is, there's a conversation there. That's fair. If you want to, as you have today, if you want to question the fact that Kyle Shanahan is over here going saying this about the fake punt.
No, we were expecting a fake punt there and they still got our edge.
Why didn't you do something to stop it then? Now you could again go to players, but I think that's tough. If you're expecting it, then there needs to be something done to really button up exactly what you think is going to happen, and it didn't happen. Those, I think, are fair conversations. This absolute cookie-cutter reaction of Niners lose, yell about Kyle's play calling, to me, is just, it's just that. Your response is as vanilla as Nick Sorensen's calls.
Basically.
It's
a default,
yes,
right? It's a default.
There's got to be more to it than that.
Like you said about Steve Kerr and his rotations, how is Steve supposed to know going into a game who's going to actually play well that night? And that's where people default to Steve Kerr's rotations. And I think a lot of fans here, it's Kyle Shanahan and the play calling. And I look at a team that had 425 yards of total offense. And again, you won the time of possession battle for the second straight week. And the second straight week, you lost. And it wasn't because of the offense, which had almost everything it wanted all day long. But it was the defense.
What a weird thing to do, which is wake up today and go, Brock Purdy was amazing. And Jordan Mason was fantastic.
Juwan Jennings?
And Juwan Jennings was just generational. And the play calling sucked. What? Again, plenty to hold Shanahan's feet to the fire today. If that's what you need to do, let's do it. Let's do it. We are doing it.
And he's the CEO, everything lands on his desk.
Of course. Just it's not play calling. It's just not play calling.
Brock Purdy had 8 incompletes and six of them were drops. When you said that earlier, yep. I scanned my notes and I was, okay, drop. And I mean, is that bad play calling? You're scheming up plays for guys who can't catch the ball, Kyle. Call a better play.
It's like me talking about my LA days. Drop.
Momo.
Drop.
Michael Thompson.
Thank you.
J.B. Long. Hey, Orny, how you doing? Whatever, all your various.
Orny will come on later this week.
I love that, man.
Sure.
Rich Ornberger.
For sure he will.
The burger.
It's Patriots week. Jeff in Rhode Island. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
What's up?
It's coming out of yesterday, obviously, living in Rhode Island, you know, it's all Patriots Niners talk this week, which is great for me. But anyways, coming out of the game, I mean, I felt, obviously, we all knew Jennings was a beast. And, he proved himself. I feel bad that, he had his day and it was taken away from him. But now I have no concerns anymore about Brock. My concern is with this defense. It's like we have holes in every level of this defense. And you sit back, I'm sitting back watching yesterday, and it's like, all right, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, they're going to get the first down. And it's just, it's a consistent thing every week. And it's like, is Greenlaw the reason why we're having some of these issues? Because it seems like he's been like such a piece to that defense with Warner that they kind of direct everything, but there's just so many holes at this point. And this is this part of the schedule we're supposed to be getting fat with.
Yep. Yep. Jeff, thanks. Yeah, that's, to me, if you really want to come out of yesterday with concerns, I certainly do. I have concerns about who they've hired as their defensive coordinator. I have concerns about whether or not the defensive personnel is what it's all cracked up to be. I have all kinds of concerns about the play calling. The special teams coaching and playing. And then I have all kinds of concerns about whether or not losses like this sort of help determine your playoff positioning in the end. Like, this is the stuff that gets you when you're at the end of the year and you're like, well, they're 12-5 and we're 12-5. And you're like, for God's sakes, how did you lose that game back in September?
12-5. No, you're not wrong. And I'm just throwing out a number. Principle, but then when I start thinking about playoff seedings, I think about how important divisional games are. And the Rams last year were a playoff team, and right now they hold the tiebreaker over you, and you're sitting at 1-2. So, yeah, 12-5. I think I had him at 11-5-1 was my official final prediction. But even that, like 11 wins, this team's going to have to turn a lot of things around.
And
you'll have to get healthy, because I don't know how sustainable a full season of Mason and Juwan Jennings and Saubert is, as opposed to McCaffrey, Debo, and George Kittle.
Well, and I mean, just like, I know right now, especially with the way the 49ers look in this moment, it's hard to wrap your head around them doing well in this. I mean, look at this now. You still got to go to Seattle. You still have to play the Chiefs. You got to play the Cowboys. You have to go to Tampa.
Buffalo and Green Bay.
You have to go to Buffalo. You have to go to Green Bay. You have to go to Miami. The Detroit Lions are coming to town. You got to do Arizona a couple of times, including in a week and a half. Kyler Murray, who looks different. And you're going to just, I don't know, win 10 of those 13 games or whatever?
Right.
I mean, maybe.
Well,
maybe
you're allowed to.
They're allowed to.
One of my favorites of yours. Right now, through three games, you are 30th in the league in third down defense. You're allowing a 53% conversion rate on third down.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, Grandy, what's
up? One of
the
teams you do have on the schedule later on, the Detroit Lions, yes. They got a little bit of a blow earlier today as well. Their all-pro center, Frank Ragnow, has suffered a partially torn pec. Ooh. Making him week to week. So it doesn't seem to be season ending. Yeah, but he's likely going to miss a good chunk of the regular season.
A torn pec is a season ender. This is a partially torn pec. So, like, that's got to be multiple games.
Yeah.
Multiple games.
I wonder if it's his hiking pec or if it's his non-hiking pec.
Oh, wow.
You know, because I don't know if you have to hike it. If that's the pec, I can't imagine you're able to hike it.
Like, for a minute, I went like, wait a minute, use your pec when you go on a hike? Like, I was like, what are we going?
He's the center.
Are we going somewhere?
And Kyle did say, and I know we want to go back to the phones, and I appreciate the patience of everyone, but he did say that Javon Hargrave has a partially torn triceps, but they have recommended surgery to repair it. So that's what is, because if it's only partially torn, sometimes you can just sit out for a handful of weeks and come back, but he's going to get surgery, so he's going to be gone.
Real quick, before we do go back to the phones, want to let everybody know about something that's coming up on Wednesday night, right here on 95.7 The Game. Very, very important. At 7 o'clock Wednesday night on 95.7 The Game, we'll be airing a two-hour special on mental health featuring some of the biggest names in music, news, and sports, and some of the most respected mental health professionals. I'm Listening is our two-hour special spreading awareness about mental health and the message that talk saves lives. The show will be hosted by Carson Daly and available, as always, on the Odyssey app. For more information, visit imlistening.org. And we're listening to you. Let's go, Ugly Timmy in Oakland. Hi, Ugly Timmy. What you doing?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? On the way home. So, as a disclaimer, as a conductor who literally drives the Cal hate train, I'll kind of back it off for Cal from yesterday's game, take some of the pressure. However, we have a defensive coordinator who calls the plays on the field, who is deemed Kyle's quote-unquote fit. All of that said, this defense is still trash. So my biggest issue with Kyle, like you said, Willard, is the way how he dealt with the Steve Wilkes situation last year. He got his guy in there that was, you know, his fit, and his defense still has no results shown on the field. So you guys know how the team works. You guys kind of know how Kyle works. So I guess my question to you guys is, given 2-3 more games that this defense really looks the way that it looks now, what do you think the team and Kyle goes?
It's a very good question. And Ugly Timmy, thank you for calling. And that's the criticism that I think is fair. Or at least that's the That's kind of the comment that that to me sparks thought, which is, okay, you kind of threw Steve Wilkes under the bus. If it was a bad fit, okay, I think we can wrap our head around that. So, Kyle, what do you want to do? He does this, they look worse. Let's call it what it is. Now, they don't have Dre Greenlaw, and Steve did. That's a piece of the puzzle. But let's call it what it is. They look worse than they did last year. And that is not arguable. And that's a huge problem. So 2-3 more games, if this hasn't buttoned it up, I mean, I don't think you fire a brand new defensive coordinator after 5 games into his first year. I don't think you do that. But you absolutely have to have like a conceptual change. Again, right now what we see is that the Niners believe that they can get things done in a very base package because they have so much wonderful talent. Well, maybe not. And so you've got to get a little bit more gimmicky. You're going to have to make changes to the way you try to disguise what you're doing on defense and start seeing if that stuff works. And oh, by the way, based on that timeline, you're going to be doing that against Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott.
Probably.
Have fun.
Yeah, and I do think that the change, if it came, would be more of a structural change between Brandon Staley and Nick Sorensen.
Maybe
Staley takes on maybe not the defensive play calling duties, but he takes a bigger role in the defensive design and the schemes, because right now what you see from the 49ers is pretty vanilla, pretty bland, and you have them at 6.5% blitz percentage. They don't blitz very often, and when they don't blitz and they play with just 4 down trying to get to the quarterback, they don't get to the quarterback. Matthew Stafford yesterday in the second half was pretty darn comfortable. And it was, you know, Adam Amin on the broadcast said it perfectly. It was pitch and catch. He and Mark Sanchez, pitch and catch with guys you've never heard of. And you're not playing a lot of close to the line of scrimmage coverage, and your pass rush is not getting home. So it's just easy for a quarterback as good and accurate as Matthew Stafford to pick you apart.
Connor and San Leandro are next up on Willard and Dibbs. Hi, Connor. We appreciate your call.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the conversation here. I'm listening to everyone, and frankly, this is not even close to as angry as this fan base used to get during the Jimmy Garoppolo era. And part of that is that even in our losses, we have an embarrassment of riches and an embarrassment of surprises against the conventional wisdom. I mean, look, Brock Purdy is a leader of men. At the peak of everyone talking about how we need to cut Ronnie Bell, the first thing that he stood up and addressed was that, saying we're going to stick with our man. I sort of do hope that we don't have an Andy Reid with the Eagles situation, right? I mean, a perfect segue with that mental health spot. You know, how does a coach year in and year out do this without having some kind of fatigue in September? You know, Brian Baldinger talks about you don't really know what your team is until there's frost on the pumpkin. I sort of wonder if that fake punt, you know, gaffe is just evidence of this, the fact that he's not just a head coach. He's also in charge of personnel after a really, really tough offseason. But even despite that, I mean, we re-signed Juwan Jennings, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
and
true.
He's really a leader of men. And Brock Purdy, I feel like, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but I feel like if we did need to strip it all down and we did need to cut Hargrave and we did need to do some of these bigger picture moves, you know, Gibbs said, what's the number with the Pats game next week? Maybe it's $30 million and we resume talks on trading Ayuk if he doesn't figure it out to the Pats. But, you know, I do think that even if we just started with Kyle Shanahan, Brock Purdy, and Juwan Jennings, I'd want to do it all over again with those three. So, you know, frankly, I really hope that Kyle doesn't need to find his way to a new city just to have a complete vibes reset before he goes on his legacy run. I really hope that we just give him the grace of, yeah, man, I can't imagine doing 2 Super Bowl runs like you've done with 2 different quarterbacks with everything that you've gone through and doing personnel, and to still face this kind of aggression from the fan base, even though you beat the Jets in week 1, just because you had 2 losses in a row and you made some dumb plays. I mean, I've got all the critique for him. I'm not an apologist and completely here, but I do think that in September, sometimes you do have to give the guy a little bit of a grace, even in the loss.
Well, Connor, look, it's a great call. And what I would say, as far as the anger of 49er fans, look, Dibs and I have been watching this for a long time, too. And maybe that was the anger more back then. Now, I think social media changes the sound of all of this. Yeah. So going back to a Walsh or a Seifert era, it doesn't necessarily sound lesser. It probably sounds more, but I don't know if that's real. But here's what I'll say. Tucked into all of that, you all have to admit that that's a compliment. So you're ticked at Kyle because Kyle blows leads that you think he should have because the roster's amazing and he's in charge of all of that too. In other words, Kyle has along with others, John Lynch, Parag, and the ownership, Jed York, like the whole group, they've built something that now deserves our expectations. So when they don't meet your expectations and you're mad, we can have that conversation. You can criticize. I just don't think that we need to consistently talk about Kyle not being here as often as we do. That is the furthest thought from anyone's mind.
Right.
Because they've built something that you find worthy of expectation. So while you're mad, you're tucked into your anger is that you think he's done a great job.
Well, and so far, yeah.
And I know for a lot of people that's hard because you're like, no, I don't. And I would argue, yes, you do.
Well, the expectations are built not only on his ability to coach, but the roster. And so now you sit at 1-2. And so the anger comes from them falling short of the expectation. And that's where the frustration starts to build because you go to Minnesota and you lose and you go down to LA and you lose. And, you know, the Minnesota game was a little different. Yesterday was just a straight up collapse. And yep. His offense was not the big problem. There were some plays that they left out there, plays that had they been made, you win the game. If Brock Purdy sees Brandon Ayuk down the middle of the field and throws it, and Kyle spoke to it today in his press teleconference, and, you know, the coverage busted and Brandon did what he's supposed to do, which is run down the middle of the field open, and Brock just didn't see him. And Brock had been running around a lot over the last three or four plays, and so he wasn't really set back there. And that's a play that they should have had, the Ronnie Bell drop, that would have led at least to a field goal, and you would have been able to bleed the clock all the way down, and you kick a field goal, and you win that game 27-24. Instead, it's a drop, and you lose. So, yeah. The frustration is based on a lot of things. Part of it is the expectation that your team is supposed to be good, but it's also because what you talked about, the schedule coming up, it gets more difficult as you get down the road here.
Yeah, no doubt. This was some time to make some hay. And now all of a sudden also, when you lose games like this, it even starts making you look at the ones that are quote-unquote supposed to be easy, and you start questioning those. You know, I still have the utmost confidence in them against New England this weekend. But how about Arizona the following week? How you feel about that game in this moment?
Not as good.
Not good. No, not great.
The Seattle game as well. And
well, going to Seattle is always tough.
Right.
Always tough.
Well, the division is a lot more balanced this year than it was last year. So those games are automatically going to be more difficult.
888-957-9570, the number. How about a little Matt in San Rafael? Hi, Matt. What's cooking?
Hey, guys. It's interesting hearing people's thoughts and opinions because it just seems like people are angry because the team isn't meeting whatever sort of criteria everyone set in their own minds at the beginning of the year. I want to talk about a couple of things that I think are potentially problems or that should be looked at. And the first one is I'm going to commit sacrilege, and that is I think Chris Kocurek's defensive line scheme isn't working. I think the wide nine is potentially problematic. I think the players come upfield too aggressively, and against the run, they can be sealed or trapped by single blocks a lot of the time, leaving guys free to pick off Warner. I think Campbell is a huge, huge downgrade from Dre Greenlaw.
Yep.
The second thing is that I think it's harder for a defensive back or a former defensive back to be a good defensive coordinator because I think they look at things from kind of like 10,000 feet. And it's a generalization, and I know Flores was actually a DB, and he's a great, great coordinator. But when you look, a lot of linebackers make good DCs, and I think part of that is because they look at it from the middle out. I think that what happened last year with Wilkes and what's happened so far with Sorensen is they're looking at trying not to let anything get behind them. It's not working because the safety play has been inferior. But I don't think they want to take chances. The last thing I want to say is, you know, everyone's talking about how the defense is so bad and how the Niners are so, you know, problematic and all that. So yesterday, everyone's favorite defensive coordinator's team got absolutely woodshedded by the team that the Niners almost beat last week. I think that the team, the Niners, are really close to being good. I think they got to change some stuff. I think they got to work on some scheme issues. And I think guys just got to play, you know, a little smarter. But I don't think this team is anywhere near going down the toilet.
Matt, thanks. I wouldn't say
down the toilet.
No.
But they're in the bathroom.
Well, yeah, after yesterday, of course they're in the bathroom, and it's not a clean one either.
No.
It's like a outhouse or porta potty.
It's, yeah.
Something like that.
But they're not going down the toilet. I would agree with that, but they're, you know, you're used to being, last year you were 5-0, you were up in the master bedroom with your feet getting rubbed and getting a massage. This year you're not.
I will say this. I agree with Matt. I have the same emotion about what we watched Minnesota do to the Houston Texans yesterday. They essentially shut them out. They shut them down. Minnesota's good. Minnesota's defense is really good. And so I don't know if that makes you feel any better. It's still a game that the 49ers could have won / also could have gotten blown out.
Should have won.
I'm talking about Minnesota now.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
Could have won, could have gotten blown out.
Yeah, good point.
But so that makes you feel better about that one. That does nothing for yesterday.
Right.
Yesterday was an embarrassment.
Yesterday was a collapse. And, you know, the word choke is overused, and it's probably too strong, but if you look at the last 13 plays of that game, and 5 of them that were made were a missed field goal, a 50-yard pass play given up, a Ronnie Bell drop, a 38-yard punt return, and a 30-yard pass interference on your linebacker who was in coverage,
Yeah, just, I mean,
all that happened in the last 2:43 of the football game.
Yeah.
5 big mistakes and the 55-yard field goal, whatever. It's probably a 60% chance. So that's not a, quote, big mistake, but you should have never had to settle for a 55-yarder.
No, that's correct. But it feels like a mistake because it was a game ender. Like a 55-yarder, I know now, is not like yesterday's 55-yarder that used to be an incredibly long kick, and now it's something you're supposed to make, and he had plenty of leg and all that stuff. But I don't know. I bake that into watching football games. Like, kickers are going to miss. You know, they're going to miss 1 out of 10. And Jake's been perfect until yesterday. 888-957-9570. How about, let's go to Kurt in Hayward. Hi, Kurt. What are you doing?
Well, fellas, I'm just a little disappointed about yesterday's game, but everybody's talking about Purdy this and Purdy that, but let me tell you something about Purdy. He had a good game yesterday. He shined. Even though Brandon Ayuk didn't do much, he still doesn't look good enough for all the money that we're paying him, but Purdy shined. He did everything possible to win that game. And the bottom line is the defense is not any good. And that's what I'm pointing out. I don't see a problem with the offense. We're out of many of our players. But the defense is not good. And the coordinator of the defense, where did they pick him up from?
Here.
Does he have any good background?
From here. He'd been on the Niners staff for a while now, Kurt.
You're kidding me, and he can't get the defense together?
Wish I was kidding you, Kurt. I'm not kidding you.
There's something wrong here. Somebody that's been on that staff watching last year, you're telling me he can't pull the right strings? There's something wrong.
That's what I'm telling you, Kurt.
Something rotten in Denmark, Kurt.
Kurt, that takes me off.
Appreciate it. He's been on the staff since 2022. He was a defensive assistant, then the passing game specialist in charge of Nickelbacks, not the band, and then this year he became the defensive coordinator.
I hate it.
Yeah, the thought was is that they were going back back to the way they did things under DeMeco and Sala. And so far, they are not.
He's
not
never been a defensive coordinator in his time. He was in Seattle with Pete Carroll for a long time, but he's never coordinated, even when he worked at Youngstown State.
Yep. It's a leap. It's all off. And then his point about Purdy, which everybody knows, Purdy was fantastic yesterday, and that I think furthers the frustration for 49er fans, especially if you're a Purdy supporter, which is to say, that's what today should have been about. Today should have been about celebrating Juwan Jennings and celebrating the fact that Brock Purdy just told "I told you so" to half the world who thinks that he's a product of the good teammates that he has. And all of those teammates were out, and Brock Purdy was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So 888-957-9570. How about Jeff and Marin? Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I couldn't agree with you more, Mark, about your comments about Purdy. You know, the flack that some fans have been calling in with about Purdy is so misplaced. First of all, he's got a tremendous pocket presence. Normally, he has tremendous vision of the field. He knows where his players are going to be. He throws accurately. He's able to scramble. The play last week where he looked like a bee sending a signal to the rest of the hive where the flower was, where he's doing a V8 and he ducks, a pass rush, and he still manages to step up and throw that sideline pass to Debo was phenomenal. And so I think it's nonsense to be critical of him. He had a great game. Jennings, as you said, had a generational game. If we'd won the game, that's all we'd be talking about.
Yep.
So, again, fans are not watching the game well if they're critical of Purdy. The criticism is obviously the defense, and nobody seems to figure out what the hell's going on there. And I'll tell you, I think part of the frustration is kind of twofold. One, I'm an old Niner fan going back to Kezar days. And when I was a kid growing up here, every year was I was always hopeful. Okay, this year's Super Bowl. And then we went through the Walsh era, and it was wow, we did. I was there, when we beat Dallas in the NFC Championship game in 81. So our expectations came up very high. And the other thing that I think happens is going into this season, I'm listening to all the commentators, the folks that, are good, that are talking about, oh, this is really improved secondary. This is a really better defense than we had last year. And I want to believe it, and I think most fans go, yeah, this is a better defense than we had last year. So our expectations before the season starts are high normally, but they're even jacked up even higher because of the reports that we're all kind of listening to and thinking, yeah, that's right, it's going to – and then they come out and they look flat. I don't know. Maybe somebody called about maybe we shouldn't be using the spread 9. I don't know, but maybe we should try stunting with Nick, right? I don't know what the solution is. Obviously, we missed Greenlaw. The secondary did not look that great. And I agree with this principle. We got to do something to do on the defense, something unexpected. Whatever it is that, that Sorensen is doing ain't working. And you got to fix that. And the person I felt most badly for was Juwan Jennings. They showed him on the sideline at one point. I don't know if you remember this. He's had this incredible freaking game, right? And he's sitting on the sideline. The game's gone out of hand. And he's sitting on the bench, and he looks so dejected.
Yep.
On his best game as a pro. And, we got nothing to show for it but a loss to L.A. And one last final comment, if you'll let me. I think Kyle is a great coach. There's no question about that. But it doesn't mean he's not subject to some criticism.
We got to run. I don't know who's saying that. Who's saying that Kyle's above criticism?
No one. He's, of course.
No one's saying that here.
He can be criticized.
Of course he should be for yesterday. Just not for the thing that a lot of you are bringing up.
Just keep the play calling out your mouth is what I would say. And just to further his point about the defense, they're giving up 6.1 yards per play, which is 29th in the National Football League. So you talk about the defense. This defense is overhyped and overrated. And whatever the reason is, the coordinator, the scheme, they need to stunt more. They need to get rid of the wide 9. Something has to change. Six yards a carry.
They're running a very similar system in theory that they did under DeMeco and Sala. And none of you had an issue with that. I can honestly say
you kind of miss me.
Yeah, it's got to be a little bit more in depth than that. is all I'm saying. This is not like overarching scheme. I think that this is calls within the scheme. And the fact that that's the best analysis I can give is that it feels arrogant. It feels like they think their players are good enough to where they can just go base all the time and they'll win one-on-one matchups. And they're not. They're losing one-on-one matchups all over the place.
At the line of scrimmage.
And that's leaving out the position that they put their safeties in against Justin Jefferson at the 3-yard line, which was also a miscalculation.
Mm.
Sensation.
Thank you. Don't leave me hanging.
No.
Cha-ching!
All right. Got some more phone calls coming up. It's Willard and Dibs.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Left.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Guess what's happening really soon? Guess what's happening, Dibs?
I can't imagine. Tell me, Mark, as he plays along, knowing full well what's coming up in 12 minutes. I try to do that. It's better for the conversation.
The Football Hour.
Yeah.
The Football Hour.
A couple of my favorites. And I said it earlier, and I'll say it again. You guys were hot yesterday. It's Kyle Madsen, Mark Grandy,
and Kyle
Sterling
Madsen.
Bennett in the overtime, but Football Hour, no Sterling, Kyle and Mark, and I'd imagine that the blood is still somewhat boiling, even though it's been a full day since you did it. How long were you guys on the air yesterday? Because you said you'd stay as long as there were calls, and I was thinking, he might actually have to sleep here tonight.
We were on until 7:30. So we were on for 3 hours.
Okay.
I just got a text from Kyle Madsen about 10 minutes ago. You want to know what it says?
No.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
Tell me. What did it say? Tell me.
Anyone blaming Purdy for anything that happened yesterday is a bleeping dunce.
Yeah.
But he didn't say bleeping.
He didn't bleep it.
No, he didn't bleep it. He texted it.
Yeah.
It starts with an F.
Jennings and Purdy. And that might be your only players on the exempt from criticism list.
I mean, Jordan Mason didn't do anything wrong.
Fair.
Jordan Mason didn't do anything wrong.
And I think that D'Amador Lenore had a good game.
Yep.
But outside of that,
that's who I'm paying next year at the defensive back position. Not Charvarius Ward.
Yeah.
That's who I'm paying. Lenore.
Well, you're going to have to come up with at least another corner. And in the meantime, you've got an Isaac Yiadom problem, and you've got other problems that you need to address.
Yeah, you've got a Devondre Campbell problem. You've got now a Javon Hargrave problem. It's a different problem than you had when the game started. Your problem when the game started was that he doesn't play very well. Your problem now is that he's not going to play again. So both of them are a problem. 888-957-9570. Ali in San Ramon. Is it Ali or Ali?
It's Ali.
Ali.
The boxer.
What's good?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Big fan. I'd like to start off with some positives. Like you guys said, I think Purdy played a great game. He is the future. I think we're going to have many years to come to watch this kid grow and have some fun football games on Sunday. So excited about that. Jennings played a hell of a game. One thing I don't know if anybody touched on is, I mean, we're all talking about the coaches, we're all talking about the players, but I go back and say the front office, like, why do we take until the first week before the season to get any of these contracts done? Some of this goes back to Lynch and team trying to, whether it's trying to get these contracts done or not completing the trades, it seems like we're like the only team maybe this year with the Dallas Cowboys that waited until the end of the training camp to get their players signed, but to me that was just very frustrating on that part. Like you mentioned, Ward giving up that big play in the fourth quarter. Bosa, who got paid and didn't show up in key moments of the game, kind of frustrating on that. But Just wanted your thoughts on the front office a little bit, but
yeah,
thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like it, Ali.
Ali, this is a really good question.
I do think you're right in many ways, because Parag Marate, the financial guy, he wants to win the deal, and whether or not you won the deal or not, you wound up with two key players who came in not ready to play football.
I have been very, very hard on Brandon Ayuk, and I will not take my foot off the gas, not even a little bit. I will add that what Christina Pink said during a sideline report yesterday about Trent Williams, admitting that he is really struggling with his wind and different things because he didn't go to camp, was very, very triggering. However, I will also add, it is completely fair to bring the 49ers as a team into this. And everybody's going to get blame here. Everyone's going to get blame. Whoever is still contributing to players missing August, you're wrong. You're wrong.
The player, the agent, the front office,
absolutely.
Everyone. Agreed.
So, like, if you want to, like, go individual by individual, how about this? Let's talk Nick Bosa. He missed camp. You guys, you knew you were going to pay him. You knew you were going to pay him. You knew you were going to pay him. So you need to do that earlier. Okay?
Agreed.
That's on you. Now, I don't know exactly. The Trent one is a little bit more mysterious to me because I don't know exactly what was being asked for at what point. But I also know, again, you knew you weren't going to play games without him. So stop waiting until the last week. That I lean more on, that's on you, 49ers. Brandon, that's different. That's different because they did move their offer the first week of August. Brandon got absolutely nothing, not another dollar, not another dime, by waiting, then admitting that he was a pain in the rear, and the Niners almost traded him, and then he begged his way out of it after demanding a trade. That's on both sides, but it's more on Brandon.
I think it's on the team just as much because they had a chance to trade him multiple times, and they didn't.
Well, the part for me that's on the team is that I wouldn't have given him that offer in the first place.
And they did.
And they did.
And, you know, if you really wanted to keep him, you would have proactively done it in March or April. You would have gotten the thing done. Before any other contract hit the market, it was much more doable at that point, yet you didn't get it done, and so it dragged, and the price went up, and we know the rest, and the rest, unfortunately, is ongoing history, and now you're in a spot where you've got two guys making big money, one's hurt, and the other one's not playing very well, so I wouldn't, and I'm not even going to go too far down the road about the future and the roster and all the rest of it, but right now, you're in a spot where, thank God for Juwan Jennings yesterday and his Superman act in the receiving game, otherwise you might have gotten run out of that game, too.
Absolutely. Although, I don't, you know, you say thank God for it, and it's not like it didn't get him a victory.
But imagine if Juwan Jennings didn't have that type of a game, what your offense would be doing. Because of those catches, two or three of those catches were, oh, my God, highlight of your life type catches.
Yes, at least one of them was all Juwan. Like, Brock put it in a spot. It was one-on-one. He put it up there, but it could have been picked. Juwan absolutely stole it from the defender. So, you know, that's fantastic. And I'm happy for him that he was able to show that he has that capability.
Yeah.
How much better do we feel about this weekend with, again, no Debo, now knowing that Juwan has that in his bag? That's what I would say. Like, it still feels like they've got a receiving core.
Right. And, you know, hopefully Kittle's able to go. We don't know what his status will be. And as we get deeper into the week and we can put this abomination in the rearview mirror, we can start to focus on a New England team that comes in with extra rest, but 10.5-point underdogs as it sits right now. But, man, it's going to be tough to even get over this tomorrow, the more you look through and you start to highlight all the little things that did not go their way.
Absolutely. So this one, the residue from this one sits for a little while. It also, though, it ramps up the intensity and the importance of the immediate. Like, this was going to be a sleepy game this weekend. Let's be real. That's what this was going to be. You win that game yesterday 27-14. Dude, you're sticking your feet up. You're like, we'll wait for Kyler. You know, classic look-ahead game, what have you. Even though I don't think for one second that the Niners have the capability of overlooking anybody right now. But I don't know, man. Like, I could also be convinced that a few weeks from now, you could end up looking at this as one of those proverbial wake-up calls. You know, if the 49ers, if they are in a Super Bowl hangover, or they are reading press clippings, or they do think they're just better at every position, well, hopefully this will help, because they're not.
Right. And this also could be a harbinger and a sign of things to come for a team that doesn't get the same amount of injury luck and, you know, has a coordinator who maybe doesn't do as great a job as you would hope, and a defense that might be overrated. And even though the quarterback looks like he is the real deal, this could be just one of those years where, you know, you're not as good as you have been over the past few.
Football Hour, Grandy, Madsen, I forgot to tell you something about it, that it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. I look forward to listening to that on the way home. Would you like to do this again tomorrow?
Big time, yeah.
Okay, let's do it again tomorrow, okay? Great job, everybody. Great interaction. I hope everybody feels a little bit better. Just a little bit better. Like, not a lot. Just a little bit. That's all we were looking for. But we'll talk to you again tomorrow. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. That's all you got.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.